From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
All right, Midnight Movie Cowboys time again this week. John's back.
Yep.
But Hunter's gone missing this time. At the 11th hour, we got told he got something and he just had the bail. He just could not get out of it. He apologizes for his absence on this episode. But to help repair the dark tone we've done over the last three shows, as we promised, the return of the Armenian madman, who's not feeling so well today.
Yeah, I got I'm a little sick.
You'll know before if you guys... Well, you won't hear it, but before the show, Garrow's been incredibly quiet, and that's a worrying sign, isn't it, John?
Yeah.
He's been
That's not natural.
It's very unnatural, because usually you can't get a word in with Garrow, but he's been incredibly quiet to the point where we lost Garrow somewhere along the way, but...
Yeah, we thought he was gone several times.
Garrow.
Yes.
We need to catch up from last time. How is the friendship between yourself and your one black friend still going?
You know, it's a series of ups and downs, mostly downs. but that's been our whole friendship the entire time. It's just a series of downs, and you know, occasionally an up, but not really a lot. You know, so it's the usual, you know, bitching and fighting, and you know, and you know, I mean, it's what happens when white people and black people usually get together. So, yeah. You know,
we do get John, Hunter, and myself usually do get the odd text message. Well, a printout of a text message conversation between Garrow and his one black friend. And yeah, let's just say everybody else on the planet wouldn't be friends after the things they say to each other. But somehow it endures after. How long you known him now?
Oh, Jesus Christ, way too long. It's got to be over 20 years, I'm thinking.
There you go.
Yeah, it's got to be. Because I think it was like around maybe 92 or 93, I think.
Yeah.
Because I know we went to see Pulp Fiction at the Harvard Film Archives in 94. So I think I knew him about 2 years before that. So probably 1992, I'm thinking.
Right.
So that's over 20 years. That's like 22 years. Way too long to know him. I should have broken off the friendship with him a long time ago. But for some reason, it's like I need that one black friend, and I've just kept it going, you know?
Because it's nice to see actual pictures Garrow sends us of his one black friend. This picture was incredible.
Some of the outfits are flamboyant.
Yeah, that one is very good. Another one you're talking about.
Put it mildly.
The one that actually gets me is the one where... his one black friend is seated at a diner or at a restaurant with a bowl of empty noodles in front of him with his huge smile on his face. You know the one, Garrow?
Yeah.
And Gary's been kind enough to send his picture of him and put the word scumbag on top of it.
Well, actually, I made that picture because I was having, lunch with him and his Chinese wife. And I remember I took that picture, and then I wrote scumbag on it and texted to her, and she got a big laugh out of it.
Oh, wow. She didn't get upset by it?
No, because she thinks he's a scumbag, too.
Well, I wonder what the department thinks about that.
But, I mean, he is a scumbag, so, you know, you can't...
I'm not saying that. I don't know him, and, well, I know who he is, but I don't know him. I'm not going to cast any judgment on him, because... there may be a time when I'm actually in Boston where I run into you and I may run into him.
And speaking of flamboyant outfits, I think it's actually the shirt he's wearing in that picture, too. When I was living in Florida, he came down there to go visit the theme parks on his honeymoon.
Yeah.
And he comes and he's wearing this shirt that has this demonic clown on it. And and he's black, and I'm just like, when did you become, like, a juggalo, you know? I mean, what the hell's going on here?
Okay, so the topic this week that we're looking at, we're not going to cover any films or nothing this time around. We're going to go back to our topics, because we quite like those. And this is one that, somewhere along the way, it just sort of reared its head, and that's the our best and worst theatre experiences, whether you've got any good ones, whether you've got all bad ones, whatever, but we've all had theatre experiences of some sort where you've thought, oh man, you know, that sucked, or that person really made it bad for me, or, you know, that was one of the best experiences, or you could have even gotten into a fight. Who knows? I mean, there's just all sorts of possibilities out there. So that's what we're talking about this week. And so what we'll do, I think we'll do it in a triangle way. Like, we'll go with Garrow, John, then pop over to myself, and we'll just give a rundown of the story that we've had over the years. If you can remember the year, great. If you can remember the film, good. But it's the experience that really counts. And that's the way we'll run it. So you don't have to number them, like, from best to worst, or just throw out any ones you want. So, Garrow, let's hear.
Okay. I'll go with the best. You know, let's start slow. One of my favorite movie-going experiences was at the Toronto Film Festival. I think it was 1999. It was an early show. It was like a 9 a.m. show for this movie. And I had been to the midnight movie the night before, and you don't get to sleep till like 3 in the morning. So I was like thinking about blowing off this movie. I was like, I'm too fucking tired. But I was like, fuck it, I'm going to go and see this movie. And the movie turned out to be the documentary American Movie, which is a great documentary about Mark Borchardt and Mike Shank making this like, you know, insane, like, short film named Coven. And it was one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. And after the screening, Mark Borchardt and Mike Shank were there and did a whole Q&A, and I ended up buying a tape of Mike Shank's music afterwards and gave him $10 for the tape. And that was, like, one of my most fun, like, you know, movie theater experiences, just sitting there and discovering this movie and then just, like, kind of hanging out with the people who were the subject of the movie afterwards. And that's one I really enjoyed.
See, I always thought that was a fake documentary when I watched it. I never thought it was real.
Yeah, it's real. Those guys are as real as can be.
Wow.
I thought some scenes were staged, but I think it's about 80% real.
Well, I mean, most documentaries about, you know, there's always that, you know, little bit of fibbing that goes on.
Yeah, thanks, Mikey Moore.
Yeah, but Michael Moore, it's like a 80-90% fibbing.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, I mean, any documentary is like that, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Good.
It is entertaining. It's a pretty fun movie.
Oh, very much. I own it. I think I bought it off iTunes. And, yeah, I watch it from time to time, but just, I always thought for the first few times, it seems too good to be real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a problem, because real life is so dull.
And then
you see stuff that's just, count, you know, nonstop amusement. You're like, okay, they had to fake some of this, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
nobody's that natural of a Laurel and Hardy team, you know.
Well, I mean, a lot of stuff does go bad during when you're shooting movies. I mean, and this was shot over a long period of time, so they're condensing all this madness into a 90-minute narrative. And, you know, you can get 90 minutes of crazy stuff from any film shoot.
Right.
True. All right, John.
With my, probably my favorite theatrical experience was, 1991, in the summer when I lived near, I lived in California's Bay Area and I lived near San Francisco, and every week I was going to see, the double features in Chinatown. At that time, San Francisco had 3 operating Chinese movie theaters, and there was still product steadily coming out of Hong Kong, not their best period, but they were consistently putting out stuff. And gambling movies were the big rage that summer. And I took my cousin, Bob, who was older, but he'd lived in that area his whole life, but had never seen a movie in Chinatown. And I said, well, you got to go to see why I do this every week. Because at that time, you could see a double feature. It was $5. And you saw 2 movies.
That's
$5
cheap.
Bucks, 2 movies. The snacks were cheap. It was stuff like, I mean, it's Asian stuff like dried fruit and what the Chinese consider snacks and everything, but it was good. You know, it was like kind of weird exotic drinks and everything, but it was cheap. You know, Vitasoy was a favorite drink at the time. So we went to a double feature, and it was the double feature was a movie called Devil's Vendetta, but was spelled on the poster Devil's Vendetta as in V-I-N-D-A-T-A, which I think was mostly a Taiwanese produced supernatural comedy, kind of like Mr. Vampire, but heavier on the comedy. And it was kind of like a weird cross between like a a Chinese wirework fantasy and Porky's. Like, there would be these scenes of them peeping on girls in the showers, but there was no nudity. It was like, it was just a weird, like, it was all, it was either really funny or there was like some crazy wirework action, but this is before they went crazy with the Swordsman Once Upon a Time in China stuff, so it was a bit more tolerable for me. I have a problem with that later stuff.
Hey, John, did they digitize out all the nudity?
No, they just didn't shoot it.
Not like the Japs. Oh, okay, then.
No. It wasn't a category... I don't think it was a category 3. I think it was a category 2 movie. So it was like a PG-13. It was hysterical, and my cousin just couldn't stop laughing at it. He's like, I've never seen a movie this energetically funny. And of course, if you look for it on DVD, you cannot find it. I don't think it ever got a DVD release. It may have been on VCD at one point, which is a video CD that was a big format in China for during the 90s.
And, yeah, the late 90s, I think it was.
Yeah. It was pretty... There might be a VCD of it. I'd love to see it again, but have never found a copy. And then the second feature was Cypress Tigers, which was sort of a Tiger on Beat remake, but with Simon Yam in the Chiang and Fat role and Conan Lee playing the partner, just like he played in Tiger on Beat, but except it was like a buddy cop movie set in Cyprus. And they actually filmed it in Cyprus. So like
in,
the rest of the
what,
cast...
Cyprus? In Europe, Cyprus?
Yes.
Wow.
And so the rest of the cast is European, you know, and they're people of Cyprus. I'm assuming a lot of Cyprus locals. I think Sophia Crawford was in the movie. She was later Sarah Michelle Gellar's fight double in like 100 episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And Calfe was the villain, and it was not a great movie or even a very good movie, but it was kind of fun because it was just kind of a fun standard Hong Kong cop action movie with some kung fu fights, because you've got Conan Lee in there and a few shootouts, but nothing John Woo crazy, because they were filming in another country, so they couldn't get away with all the silly stunt stuff they do in Hong Kong that sends people to the hospital. And but the subtitles had a funny sort of, I don't know if it's a contradiction or just sort of a faux pas, is where instead of saying chief in the subtitles, they call their police chief head. So whenever they see him on screen, they're constantly going, hey, head. Head, come on, let us go. Head, we need to go catch the bad guy. So it was this running gag that we found hysterical. And so, you know, this is a double feature. Takes up a whole afternoon. There was actually a big crowd there because it was a Saturday afternoon showing. And, of course, Chinese are catching jokes in Cantonese that we're not hearing. So they're laughing at different things than we are, because we're laughing at bad subtitles or witty subtitles or, you know, just something going on in the film. But they're laughing at stuff because there's a lot of... colloquial humor in Cantonese comedy that they're hearing that we're not.
Right.
And so they're cracking up at all sorts of... I mean, if you see a Stephen Chow movie in Chinatown, they're laughing at completely different things. It's, you know, it's that type of experience. But that it was such a blast. My cousin was just blown away. He's like, this is great. This is what going to the movies is supposed to be like. It's supposed to be fun like this. And then we went to see Point Break a couple of days later because it was opening that week.
Oh,
and
Lord.
We walked out of that. We weren't really impressed with it at the time. Now it's this big cult action, you know, real loved action movie.
Yeah, for some reason, Point Break just seems to be like this, you know, highly revered action film.
Right.
I think it's just half-assed, really.
Yeah, when we saw it, we thought it was half-assed. And my cousin said, I thought that Cypress Tigers movie was better than Point Break. And they didn't have nearly the amount of money to make that movie. And it was more fun and enjoyable and a better action film.
Can you get this Cypress Tigers now on home video?
I think there was a VCD in the 90s. As far as I know, there was never a DVD anywhere.
There's no YouTube upload somewhere at all?
There may be a YouTube. If you go on Amazon, I think there's like a old Pan Asia or Tai-Sing videotape that people are selling for an inflated price. But I actually, it's funny because I was friends with Conan Lee on Facebook at one time when he was on Facebook. And he talked about that movie. He said he had a blast making it, and he said it was just fun. I got the impression it was pretty much like a vacation for the cast and crew when they went to make it in Cyprus. They were just having a good time, and he loved making it. He was proud of it. And I said, well, too bad we don't have a decent DVD. And he was like, yeah, we need one. But
See, Garrett Crashton must have got into that shit and got it out.
Well, I mean, That one I never came across a 35mm print of.
Okay.
So that's the problem. I mean, I've seen the movie too. It's a fun movie. It also has that great midsection where the bad guys make it seem like the two cops did a gay porno together.
Yeah.
called like Gay Heroes.
Yes.
And everyone on the beach is like, hey, it's the Gay Heroes.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, they even put out a videotape, and it's like this beefcake shot of Conan Lee with his gun.
Oh my god!
It's like gay hero. And they're on a topless beach, so there's actually a lot of nudity in it for a Hong Kong film at the time. The nice. Category 3 explosion hadn't happened, so they have all these topless, you know, Cypress women that they're all, you know, doing Canto jokes at or whatever. But no, it's a fun movie. But that, to me, like, I can just remember that day and seeing that. And that was one of the better double features I caught in Chinatown that year.
Cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll shift over to my best experience. Would have been about 2000 and... God, I want to say about 2003 or something like that. Where my brother and I went to a midnight... I think it was a midnight screening of Pink Flamingos. And, yeah.
I think you just took Garrow's least favorite experience.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, this is probably my favorite, and we went and saw it, and I'd seen it before, but I wanted to see it on the big screen, and it was just it had the right crowd in there. Nobody got offended and walked out. It was just the funniest thing I'd seen in ages, and I mean, they're running a DVD of it, but they're running a censored version. I had the uncensored American DVD, but they were playing the Australian one, which was heavily cut. The whole, the whole Divine giving the blowjob to the sun, it's gone. That was cut. The turkey baster, the insemination bit was gone. But yeah, it was a good experience, and everybody got all the jokes. I kind of wish I had played the uncut version, but never mind. It was still fun anyway. But that was a good night out. That was a lot of fun.
Right.
And seeing that guy with that, you never seen it, have you, John?
No. I've no interest in like early John Waters. I just never have. It's, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just, everybody else loves it, but I'm like, I just don't care.
Gara, I gather you've seen it then.
Yeah, they have did like some 25th anniversary re-release.
That was the one, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and my my friend who's a film critic, Betsy Sherman, she used to write for the Boston Globe. She was like, "Oh, you got to see Pink Flamingos. You got to see Pink Flamingos." I'm like, "Okay, I'll go see it." So I went to the now defunct Harvard Square Theater to go see it, and I just sat there like I don't like this at all.
Really?
Like,
oh.
not even offended, except for like the gay blowjob scene. But like that was like I just sat there and it was just like this isn't my sense of humor at all. You know, it's like it seemed like a movie that was made for the specific reason just to shock.
It was.
You know,
it really was.
But there didn't seem to be anything else behind it except the need to shock. And I need a little something more than that. Do you know what I mean?
You didn't want that. You didn't like that guy with the ass, with the singing anus. Remember that? That guy. Yeah. They're at that party outside. And it's got that song. Yeah, yeah. And that guy. He strips off. He lies on his back, and his anus just dilates open and closed.
Yeah. See, it's like to me, that stuff should be like in gay porno films. Or in a Jackass sequel. It should, you know, not in a narrative film. You know what I mean?
In other words, a gay porno film.
Yeah, pretty much.
Exactly.
But yeah, that was probably one of my favorite experiences at the theater. I mean, unfortunately, with the ones you'll hear tonight, listeners, my experience is not very good except for that. That's about one of the best ones I've had. Or going to see House of Wax in 3D years and years ago. But that was nothing worth bringing up into detail. That was just one of those. But yeah, the Pink Flamingo screen with my brother that night was probably the best one I've had, I'd say. Alright, let's move on. If you've got any more best ones, carry on. If you don't, let's get into the juicy stuff, the worst ones.
I'm going to talk about probably this was 1992. I'm going Chinatown again like John. I was going to Chinatown to go see the they were playing this new Jackie Chan movie, Island of Fire, which you've talked about on the show recently you were talking about Wang Yu, the one that Hunter and John did about Jackie Chan.
All right.
Yeah, it was a movie that Jackie Chan made as a favor to Wang Yu. And it's not like any Jackie Chan movie. It's very super serious. It's not even really that good of a movie, Island of Fire. But the co-feature was this movie called God of Gamblers 2. Which the first God of Gamblers starred Chow Yun-fat. And I'm looking at the poster for God of Gamblers 2, and I'm like, where the hell's Chow Yun-fat? He's not in this movie. Andy Lau was in it again, but there was this new guy who I did not know. But, you know, you pay $5 for the double bill. You know, I'll watch the movie. I like the first God of Gamblers. Who knows? Maybe this will be good. So I'm watching the movie. and I'm laughing at the lead actor. The lead actor is so damn funny. And after the movie was over, I'm like, I got to find out who this guy is. This guy is hysterical. And it turned out it was Stephen Chow. And that was, and Stephen Chow is probably one of my all-time favorite comedic actors ever. And that screening is one of my favorites, because without that, I probably would have, you know, discovered Stephen Chow, but that one was the one that just like made me go, okay, that guy is someone I need to follow and watch his movies and stuff like that. So that's a really memorable screening for me and probably one of my favorites.
Hey, Garrow, did you cry at CJ7 when you watched that?
CJ7, John's a fan. I was disappointed.
My daughter said she watched it and she just cried her eyes out. I was like, that's what I've heard from everybody. What is it with this film? Everybody cries about this CJ7.
It's his answer to E.T., basically. It's Stephen Chow's version.
Did you cry at it, John?
I was a little moved. I didn't cry, but I was pretty moved.
Oh, wow.
And I did not expect to be. I was like, this is not exactly the cutest alien I've seen in movies. And,
yeah.
You know, this movie's got it does have a mean streak of humor in it, too. And it was very mismarketed in the U.S. They market it to the art house crowd, expecting another kung fu hustle, which it is not. And they could have marketed to the family crowd and done a lot better, I think. Maybe cut some of the raunchy humor out, and they would have had a family hit.
I've never seen it. I've never seen any of his films, ever.
Really?
You should see Kung Fu Hustle. That's probably his most...
Yeah, everyone says you got to watch that. They said it's hysterical. Is that a comedy, or is it action?
It's a comedy. He has mainly made comedies, for the most part.
Because didn't you say he was meant to have done the Green Hornet movie? Was that him?
Yeah, he was going to direct it. What happened was his ideas were so outrageous that the Sony suits fired him.
Jeez.
Yeah, so when I heard that Seth Rogen and Stephen Chow were making a movie together, I was super excited. I'm like, this could be like a fantastic film. And then, you know, then for about 6 months you heard that they were working on it, and the next thing you know, you heard Stephen Chow's out of here, and then started leaking out, you know, that, what he was trying to make was make Green Hornet in the style of his other movies, like, you know, like Kung Fu Hustle and stuff like that. But Stephen Chow's movies are not on the same wavelength as most mainstream American movies, you know?
Right.
And those ideas, when you have to start going through the studio system, those ideas scare the suits.
Yeah.
And he had, and it was probably inevitable that he would have been fired.
Okay,
I hope for the best.
Let me ask you guys, who, and Hannah brought this up way, way back in one of the first episodes we ever did, who did a film called Finishing the Game?
That was Justin Lin, who did the recent Fast and Furious movies.
Okay, so I thought it might have been Stephen Chow.
No.
And that's one.
It would have been good if Stephen Chow had made it, but no.
And that's the one with Breeze Liu, isn't it?
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Really?
Disappointingly awful, I thought.
Okay, because he really talked it up on the show. He really liked it, but
yeah, I've got a different viewpoint of that sort of stuff than somebody Hunter's age. You
know? please tell me in that Finishing the Game they did put that paper mask over someone's Bruce Lee's face over someone.
They didn't. They didn't even acknowledge the reality of making Game of Death, which is actually more amusing and sadder and funnier than anything they had on screen. They were like in this fictional world of Game of Death where I don't know. That whole thing was so messed up. I didn't care for it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was just, they just went way off the reservation on that. Just not as nearly as funny as, it's funnier to watch Game of Death, the Bob Klaus version.
God, it's painful to watch Game of Death. It's
awful. It's awful. It's absolutely dreadful.
It is. All right.
Tower of Death's great though. Game of Death too. That fucking rocks.
Is
that
it?
It's the greatest movie ever made.
Oh, I remember my brother telling me about one he used to rent out all the time called Fist of Fear, Touch of Death.
Oh, that one's hilarious. It's a bad movie, but it's hilarious.
Is it the one? Apparently my brother was saying some guy gets his eyes poked out in the ring and thrown out of the ring or something.
Oh, it's got a bunch of stupid stuff in it. It's total, like, it's considered the worst Bruce exploitation movie of all time, but it was basically made to promote the New York karate scene that Aaron Banks was promoting the Oriental World of Self-Defense, which was actually aired on ABC Network. I may have brought it up on previous shows, but that was a big deal at the time. So that whole New York karate scene was very into showmanship and craziness. So they kind of made this Bruce Lee exploitation movie around that, and they have like Aaron Banks in black and white talking to the footage of Bruce Lee from that Longstreet episode.
Oh, looks like Lord.
Yeah, there's actually a clip on YouTube. You can look it up. It's just look up Aaron Banks, Bruce Lee, and the clip comes up as Aaron Banks, Bruce Lee, Super Buddies. It is a riot because it's like they're just flattering each other, and it's this horribly edited, you know, thing to make it look like Aaron's in the room with him. It's, oh, man, it's bad.
All right. All right, John, let's move it on to you. What's, you got, got another best one, or you got moving to your worst ones?
I can move on to worst. Well, I'll tell you what. I'll say one best one that's kind of a weird nostalgia. Right. I think we kind of specialize in. I guess that's why people listen to these odd shows. Is back in the 70s, they were doing like this thing where kids would bring a can of food for like a matinee movie. Like you just brought it. It was like a charity deal, and they would run like an old 35 millimeter that I guess a theater owner was sitting on or a distributor had. I don't know how they got them, but I saw something that never saw the title of it. It's really weird, but it was. They just said it was Snow White. In the Seven Dwarfs, but it was not the Disney movie. It was this old, like, early 50s, I was guessing, black and white movie. And but it was a tolerable, you know, enjoyable kids matinee movie. And there was a good degree of imagination, but the film projector kept breaking down. So the kids were real reactive and booing and every time that happened. But then, like, there would be a scene like some mermaids came to rescue the Seven Dwarfs, and the kids were like oohing and ahhing at the mermaids and stuff and whistling, and everybody's like, I think I was like in the second grade, so everybody's like very grade school age. And then there was a sword fight at the end where the prince is rescuing Snow White and he's having a sword fight with the bad guy, and everybody's just going crazy and cheering, but the projection keeps breaking down, so everybody's booing. But then it took me years to find out what this film was until like maybe 3 years ago. It was an Italian film called Seven Dwarfs to the Rescue. Like, I searched and and I thought it might be some horrible. There was a really bad American Snow White movie made in the 50s with like an ice skating champ as Snow White or something.
Oh,
maybe
my
with
goodness.
The Three Stooges. But no, it turned out to be this Italian film that I think Mario Bava worked on called Seven Dwarfs to the Rescue.
God,
and it has
Lord.
Like this bad reputation online. I'm like, you know, kids liked it. I think it was made for kids. So how could you say it's that bad?
That projection could be sitting on a gold mine of a film if he's still got the 35 millimeter print.
I know. And like, there's only been like something from one of the first videotape companies. I think Video Yesteryear is the only company to ever release it like on videotape, like in 1979. Like, it's very,
wow,
that's scarce film.
Jesus.
Yeah. But I got to hunt it down. But that's like one of the really memorable screenings instead of me going into the obvious, oh, I saw this Chinese movie and it blew me away.
Actually, speaking of that, our school, my high school I was at, I went to three of them because we just kept moving. And the last one I went on my own volition to just move, be with some friends. And the first one, though, I went to had a theater, had a screen and projector thing there. And they only played one movie for us throughout that whole 2 years I was there, and that was Trading Places.
What?
Yeah, I kid you not.
So then Merry New Year become the big saying around the neighborhood?
I don't know, but I can tell you when Jamie Lee stripped off, this hush went over the fucking audience.
Everybody's quiet.
Yeah, everyone went quiet, all right, yeah. So, thanks to my high school for doing that. Seeing those on the big screen really, putting that through a 13-year-old boy, wow, not a good idea. Not just me, but a whole bunch of us in there. But I'm going to shift away now. Johnny, you done with your one?
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to shift away from my good experience. I only had one to my worst ones. But my worst ones won't exactly be ones that were bad for me, but they were bad for somebody or some place in particular. So, all right. You getting ready? This is where I start unleashing the nasty stuff. All right. Anyway, I think Garrow may have heard this one. I just told it recently. It was 1995, I believe it was. And I was going to the drive-in at the time, and I went to see the Paul Hogan classic, Lightning Jack.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Cuba Gooding Jr. is a deaf mute with Beverly D'Angelo and Paul Hogan. I mean, that's casting right there.
I think it's Cuba Gooding Jr.'s finest role up until he did the movie Radio, where he played the retarded guy.
So anyway, so I figure it's a 20-minute drive from my house to the drive-in. I'm gonna grab a pizza. and take it with me down there and go watch the film. Grab a pizza, picked up from the place. This is a real grimy place up near my house at the time. Drove to the drive-in, paid my money, got in, started watching Lightning Jack. I'm eating the pizza, I'm watching the film. You know, it's okay. I'm kind of digging it. It's not that bad. And then I take a bite of the pizza, and I feel this crunch in my mouth. I thought, what the hell is that? And it was like, it wasn't like it was something, it was, you know, it was odd, like an odd sort of texture. And I fished around my mouth to see if I chipped any teeth or something. Nothing wrong with that. Okay. Spat it out, had a look on there. Yeah. The cooked gold tooth had fallen out on the pizza. I'd taken a bite straight into it.
Eesh.
Yeah. So, but I tell you what, it didn't deter me. I just threw that piece out and kept eating the rest of it.
Why'd you throw the gold out? That's gold. Yeah. That's money.
It's worth money, especially now. Yeah.
Can't melt that shit down, I tell you.
Gold markets are big, man. You should have held on to that.
Gold market wasn't worth shit back then. I didn't know nothing about the stocks as it was.
That's the point. You get it when it's cheap. It was free.
It was
free. Yeah.
God.
You buy low. You sell high.
When you take a bite into a guy's mouth or part of his mouth, you're not really worried about money at the time.
Sticking it some witch hazel, it would have been fine.
Yeah. So that was that. Yeah. It kind of didn't help, but the film really wasn't very good in the end. But that was the highlight of the night by far. Taking a bite into a pizza only to have spit out the guy's gold tooth that had fallen into it. Needless to say, he went out of business about a year later. I'm surprised.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Lost his savings on your pizza.
Yeah, I mean, he kept having to replace that gold tooth over and over again.
He'd run out of teeth, I think. Yeah, he ran out of teeth.
Flavor Flav's pizza.
It should have been. No, actually, what was it? What was it called? Was it Joe's or Tony's? Tony's, that's what it was. But there's never been a pizza store called Tony's before, right, in the world somewhere.
No, they're pretty scarce.
They're pretty scarce, yeah.
Yeah.
A bit like Frankie's Pizza, right? Yeah,
you don't associate with Tony with pizza at all.
But, yeah, that's that one. So, move on to Garrow.
Okay, I got another good one.
God, have you got any bad ones where you got into fucking fights or screwing or something like that? Actually, hang on, wait. There's, before you go, there's a question I want to ask you guys now, okay? You can either answer it or not, and if you want to go into detail, it's up to you. Have any of you guys ever had sex during a film?
Yes.
All right.
For me, never all the way in the theater.
Okay. Hey, well, not intercourse, but like blowjobs.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
I know the three movies it was, and I can tell you what three movies.
Three movies? Jeez, you got some staying power. Or was it three separate times?
It was three separate times.
Oh, okay. I was going to say shit.
The three movies. All of them are shit movies. The Ashley Judd star Double Jeopardy. Kung Pao Enter the Fist.
Oh, wow. That was a good movie, that one.
That was a terrible movie.
Oh, come on.
And here's the weird thing. That one was a little iffy because there were a lot of kids in the theater. And that one could have had a bad ending, but it didn't. It had a happy ending. and then the third one was Charlie's Angels Full Throttle.
Oh, Jesus.
So, as you can see, I had a good... there was nothing else to do but to get a blowjob during those movies, because they were so terrible. But, yeah.
I'd like to know how you actually procured this blowjob those different times. Obviously, you went with a girlfriend at the time, right?
Yeah, it was the same girl who did it all three times. It was my girlfriend at the time, so...
Listen, wasn't he one black friend? Well, thank God for that.
No. That wasn't him, thank God. Because I think he'd be all teeth, and that's trouble.
Gold teeth?
No, not gold teeth. You're a pizza guy.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And that's the truth. All right. All right. Got any more stories, Garrow?
Okay, this one is another best one, and I think it might even be one of John's best ones, because he was there too. This was probably the 90s at a 24-hour sci-fi marathon.
Oh, yeah. Shit.
And John knows exactly what I'm talking about. It was a 1930s movie, sci-fi movie called Just Imagine. And the thing about Just Imagine was, you could tell the movie was made by gay dudes, because the movie is super gay. Like, everything in the movie is phallic-looking. Anytime there's girls around, the guys are like, oh, get away, and start, like, you know, let's take a bath with the guys. You know?
Really?
And they smack each other on the rear.
Yeah.
I think this just got a Blu-ray release, this one. From is it 1930?
1930.
Yeah, it's very rare. It's I think it's on YouTube.
Right. It rings a bell, that's all.
They have like a happy scene where they're happy to get like a needle in the butt. They're getting shot.
Yeah.
Shit.
And then they go to Mars or the moon, I can't remember, and all the women on Mars or the moon look like drag queens. Like, they're very harsh looking, like with Joan Crawford eyebrows and stuff.
But at this 24-hour thing, people, like, you know, during the bad movies, people will, like, you know, say talk stuff, and, you know, it's kind of like that Mystery Science Theater kind of thing, you know, where you do, but you put me in that type of situation and you're showing me all this fucking homoerotic shit going on in a 1930s sci-fi movie, I have to comment on it. I cannot not comment on it. So I've noticed this stuff like right away. Within 5 minutes of the movie, I know what's going on, you know? Yeah. And I start making gay jokes. And I am getting laughs from the audience, except for the people who are sitting right next to John.
Yeah.
Who hate me. Who are like, will you tell your friend to stop saying such homophobic stuff?
Really?
Yeah, it was a gay dude, and it was his what's the safe word? Fruit fly, the girl next to him, and she told
fruit fly. What the hell? What the hell's fruit fly mean?
The actual word you'll probably have to bleep this out is f hag, but you know it's not appropriate to say that. But she told me like Caro and another one of his friends were there, and they were making all these jokes, and she said, "Excuse me, can you tell your friend to stop making the queer jokes?" And then Garo said something rude. I said, "Hey, Garo, she wants you to stop making queer jokes." And Garo's like, "I don't care!" And then he keeps shouting horrible jokes. You know, a guy gets a shot in the butt and then hugs his friend. And then Garo says, "That's not the first time he took it up the ass." And then, like, the whole crowd went, "Ooh!" Like, it was just... It was pretty much a night of hate. But then I looked over, and the gay guy is crying. He's actually crying. Because other people started doing it.
He emotionally broke down crying or laughter.
Yes, he cried. Yeah. He was
crying.
Wow. With tears.
Yeah, because about halfway through the movie, everyone started to realize how gay the movie was. And then pretty much 90% of the audience was doing gay jokes, too.
Yeah. There was just a point where they go to the ship that's going to take them to the moon, and it just looks like a big phallus. And then I finally shouted, so I wasn't really saying any jokes because there were kids there. I just don't do jokes like that with kids around.
But of course,
these parents had no problem with their kids sitting through Clockwork Orange. But, you know, and as soon as I saw that ship, I went, "Good Lord, when you think this movie's done enough, it just gets way worse." And then everybody, that just opened the floodgates, and then everybody just started, it was just nonstop jokes. Of course, a gay dude next to us was crying. They may have left later on, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember, honestly, but that was just, like, such a ridiculous, and maybe the guy running the festival had not screened the film before he ran it. But it was pretty rare at the time. Like, you just couldn't see it anywhere. And it's kind of famous because it's mentioned in a Robert Crumb comic strip. And, of course, Robert Crumb, I don't think, saw it when he was a kid and wasn't really aware of all the stuff that was going over his head. So otherwise, people would just look at it and go, "Good Lord." I mean, Maureen O'Sullivan is in the movie. I think she's in the film, and she played Jane in the Tarzan movie. She's hot, but nobody notices in the film.
She's cast aside.
Yeah, exactly. They're more interested in hugging each other and slapping each other in the rear.
Well,
Here's the thing, Stuart,
yeah.
Is it's a 1930s movie, and yet it's gayer than Pink Flamingos.
Yeah, it is.
Is it gayer than Can't Stop the Music?
I've seen that. It may be.
I don't know. I think Just Imagine is actually gayer than Can't Stop the Music.
You've seen that, right? Can't Stop the Music?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've seen Can't Stop the Music.
I think it's a fantastic film. But Just Imagine's on DVD.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can sit through it again. The flashbacks.
Man, we'd have to, like, if that shit's on YouTube, maybe we just have to sort of, like, commentary on that shit, all four of us, one day.
Banned podcast commentary.
Nah.
Glad's hateless.
It would be the first podcast labeled as a hate crime.
Yeah. We just should do the hate crime podcast and just have all the stuff. But...
call it Faghag Cast.
Then you're going to totally get the wrong audience. You're going to get Who's that redheaded comedian, Kathy Griffin?
Oh, yeah. God.
And Margaret Cho. That's the kind of crowd.
Right? I thought you were going to say Carrot Top for a second when you said that redheaded female.
If you want to throw Carrot Top in there, that's fine.
Oh, no. No, thanks.
I was going to say you're wrong.
No. I can live with that Carrot Top, thanks.
But yeah, that was quite an experience.
I'm sure it was. All right, John.
Okay, talk about worst.
Anyone you want.
Okay. Worst is a technical thing, which I mean, a lot of people complain about digital projection today. I don't know why, because if I go to a movie, it looks good. It's always been projected correctly.
Yeah.
You know, because projectionists in the 80s, there's a lot of high school kids that have no clue what they're doing. So when I was like 14, we went to see Willow, the George Lucas production. It's like
Warwick Davis.
Yeah. It's like a Lord of the Rings ripoff done Star Wars style. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. But for some reason, all right, it's a scope film, and the projectionist couldn't tell the difference between scope and matted for the lens, I think.
Right.
And so we watched the whole thing squeezed up like it's shot through a glass of water. And the whole movie was like that. And because I'm 14, I don't know a lot about film projection and film formatting at the time. I know something's wrong. I said, this looks like the beginning of the Shaw Brothers movies on TV when they always squeeze up the title sequence back in the old pan and scan days.
Yeah.
And so to this day, I've never seen the Ebersys Dragon in proper scope format, I should say. But I just noticed everybody looked too thin, and like it was a pretty painful experience. Like I should have, if I'd known what I was doing, I would have, you know, gone back there and yelled, put a scope lens on it, or it's... You're projecting it wrong, whatever the hell.
You know who actually supervised that that projection there, John? Was Warwick Davis himself. He actually wanted to be a bit taller on the screen.
I would have thought Stevie Wonder did, because it was just so... Like,
was it that bad, was it?
Oh, man. It's like, how could you not know? How could you not know the difference between scope and matted? It's crazy.
Yeah.
And you're working in a movie theater, and this is packed with kids, and we're watching it like it's giving... Making my eyes sore seeing like Val Kilmer looks like he's 7 feet tall.
And these days when he's in scope, he looks like he's about 7 feet wide.
Yeah, he looks like he did in Real Genius in scope. If you squeeze up the scope now, I think.
Oh, okay.
Because he's a monster now.
Yeah,
he's like a tank.
He really
Christian
is.
Scientist tank. And the other like kind of cringingly bad. Well, not really. I didn't feel much guilt because I enjoyed the movie and stuff. But it was I went to see. Took the day off from, or, you know, left after my first class the day True Romance opened in Memphis. I was going to University of Mississippi at the time, Ole Miss, if you're local. And went to see the first showing of True Romance, and because I was a big Reservoir Dogs fan. And there was that scene. It was just me in the theater, maybe two, three other people, couldn't really tell. Because it's one of those terrible aisles in the middle of the seats. Not the way theaters are now, but the small, bad multiplexes that they built in malls in the 70s and 80s. And the scene comes up between Dennis Hopper and Christopher Walken, which, of course, is that big, famous dialogue scene that supposedly Al Pacino can do it impeccably. But, you know, they're dropping the N-bombs quite a bit, and it's pretty politically incorrect. You know, probably wouldn't be filmed today, probably wouldn't be in the movie today. But I'm laughing my ass off at it because it's brilliant. It really is a brilliant scene.
Yeah.
So I'm just laughing my ass off at it. And maybe about 5 minutes later, after that scene's done, after Walken kills Dennis Hopper, I look back and like the only dude in the theater is like a black dude, like in his like 30s maybe, you know, whatever. But he didn't seem happy. I don't know if he was still there like by the end of the movie. I think he left after a while.
Really.
But man, I was laughing my head off because it's a funny scene. I mean, it's not politically correct at all, but it's a hysterical sequence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the most famous scene. Everybody knows it. Like, every actor in Hollywood could do it. But, you know, at that time, it was like laughing at it. It's thought to be inappropriate. I didn't really care. I was like, oh, well, whatever. You know?
That's it. That'd be an uncomfortable situation, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was kind of cringy. It's like, well, I feel bad. And, you know. I was like, guy didn't have his feelings hurt or anything, but, you know, whatever.
God, fuck him. Who cares? Yeah, seriously.
It's the fucking movie. Who gives a damn?
It's all right.
But I was like, ah! You know, laughing out. I was the same way during Cabin Fever when I saw it with that crowd in Nashville, which I talked about on an earlier show, so I didn't care.
Yeah. Full of mulattoes, wasn't it?
According to Hunter's viewpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
But yeah, I remember that people were like, shit, what the hell? What the hell did you just say? That was whites and blacks not knowing how to react to those jokes.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to move around to another experience I had. I'll give a brief honorable mention one to the one my brother and I. A lot of stuff seemed to happen with my brother and I together. I don't know why.
It's a trouble.
I think so. You know, the Cray brothers have got shit on us too. Seriously. Anyway, so we go to 1990. We'll go back to when I was about 18 at the time, 18, 19. And we're in a theatre and we're watching Exorcist 3 on the big screen. Mm-hmm. And there's like five people in the theatre, including us two. This woman decides to come in and sit in the row in front of us. Like, we're to the side and, you know, halfway at the back. She decides to sit in this entirely empty theatre in front of us, the row in front of us. And we thought, you got to be kidding. Okay. Whatever. So she sits down. Then, at the time, that was when mobiles or cell phones were starting to become the in thing. And she's got this big freaking cell phone, like the size of a brick in her hand.
Right.
And she's on the phone for the first 20 minutes of the fucking movie. Yeah, I'm in here. I'm watching this horror film, Mom, Exorcist 3 or something like that. Blah, 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 blah. I thought, oh, come on, just shut up, will you? You know, we don't need to know your fucking ins and outs. And I said to her, look, we're trying to watch this because we were really excited. We saw the trailer, the TV spot on TV, and we thought, we want to really see this film. So we're sitting there, we're watching it, and I go, look, can you cut it out? Because we're trying to watch this, and you're just talking on your phone. And she goes, ah, but I'm talking to my friend. I said, I don't care, just cut it out. She keeps talking another 5 minutes, though, and this is about the 20-minute mark of the film. My brother, you gotta understand, my brother's skinny, okay? I'm a solid guy. My brother's skinny. He's just a little tad taller than me. He says, if you don't get off that phone, I'm going to shove up your fucking ass, I swear to God. She gets up and walks and leaves the fucking theater after that. And we thought, okay, they're going to come back with the management. She never came back. No one ever came back in. That's that. Another story that includes my brother is, this one's a bit long-winded, but I couldn't make this shit up if I tried. We went to see about, oh God, I want to say maybe about 8 years ago, a double feature of Badlands and Mean Streets together on a Saturday night. We go to watch this film. We watch Badlands first. That plays first. Then we're watching Mean Streets. Towards the end of Mean Streets, about maybe two-thirds of the way in, this guy's got one of those, you know, those Slurpee cups with the frozen drinks in them?
Right.
That when you get to them, then you get towards the bottom, it makes that really irritating noise?
Yeah.
He's doing that. And I thought, oh, come on, mate. You got to be kidding me. You don't need to hear that crap. We're trying to watch the film. I mean, I'd seen it plenty of times, but I still wanted to see it on the big screen. Mm-hmm. So I yelled out to him. We were in the middle row towards the back, and he was over to our right. And I said to him, hey, shut up, or something like that. I said, he kept going. I said to him, shut fucking up, will you? We're trying to hear the film. Anyway, the film finishes. The credits start rolling. He comes over towards us. Okay, he's obviously looked over and seen where we're at. But he starts on my brother, and he says to him, what did you fucking say? And my brother goes, before he had a chance, I said, look, it wasn't him, it was me. I said, I told you to fucking shut up. And he starts on me, but the thing was, by the time my brother had slugged him one in the face. Now, you have to understand, where we watched this film was on a second level. So you go through the front doors, up a set of stairs, and you walk along the landing, and then you go into the theatre. My brother has grabbed this guy and just punched him. And grabbed him and kept punching him down two flights of stairs. And then it spills out into the street after that. And my brother's just made a fucking mess of this guy. He's just, like, people are just watching. And I'm just like, just let it go. Let it go. Let's get out of here. No, he's grabbed him. They've walked each other down the stairs. And my brother's kept punching him after that. This guy was just a big mouth. He was a drunk or something like that. It spills out into the streets, out into a really popular, you know, very busy street here in Melbourne. And I said, yeah, my brother keeps going, keeps punching him outside. All of a sudden, a cop car comes because down the road is a police station. We're like, oh, fuck, they're coming for us. Someone's called them. So we bolt across the major road, get into my car, and drive home. Now, remember, that's on a Saturday night. The next day, or 2 days later, on the Monday, I'm at work. Okay, this is all been and gone. I'm at work. I was working retail at the time in a liquor store. About 3:15, I'm getting ready to go home in about an hour or so after that. guess who walks through the fucking door with a massive black eye?
Slurpee guy.
Slurpee guy walks in. I looked at him and I said, oh shit, that's that guy my brother punched the shit out of on Saturday night. Oh my god, he's going to recognise me and cause a scene. I'm going to get my ass fucking kicked. Guess what? And there's no one else in the store at the time. Like, they're all buggered off. I know where to hide out the back at all. I'm like, oh god, I got to fucking deal with this guy. All right, no worries. Grabs his bottle of vodka, comes to the counter, looks at me. I said, how you going, mate? He goes, oh yeah, all right, just this, thanks. Whatever it cost, $30, whatever. Guess what? He took the bottle of vodka and walked out. Never fucking recognised me, ever. And this guy's sporting a fucking black eye like I've never seen before.
Maybe your brother punched the memory of the incident out of him.
I think so.
He blacked out.
But the
he might have been drunk when he was in the theater, though. Might have had vodka in the Slurpee.
He may have done. I don't know. But
yeah. And is that technically a worst or a best?
Yeah.
Well, it was best for me. It was worse for him.
All right, okay.
That's what I said. Some of them got classes worse. They're right for me, but they're bad for somebody or something. Yeah. Yeah, that was that. That was one of the most eventful ones I think I've ever done.
Yeah. That would make national headlines here.
So you got to be kidding me. That
Mean Streets and Badlands cause violence.
Yeah. Scorsese and the other guy, whatever his name is.
Terrence Malick.
Malick, yeah.
Yeah, Hunter's favorite director.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe the violence spilled over from the fact that Badlands was so damn boring.
Oh, come on, it's brilliant. The guy only makes a movie every 20 years. He's brilliant.
Of course he is, yeah. Ah, it's okay. Badlands all right. I don't mind it. It's not that bad. All right, moving on. Garrow, got any more?
Yep, this is a bad one.
Bad for who? You or bad for somebody else?
It's bad for me.
All right.
Every time I have to go see a movie with my black friend.
How often is that, by the way? Is that very often or very infrequent?
We try to see a movie every week, except this year. Except this year, there hasn't been that many good movies actually being released that I actually want to see. So I think we've seen maybe 3 movies this year because there hasn't been any really good movies. It's like Hollywood is just releasing crap after crap after crap. It's ridiculous. It's like, do I really want to go see that horrible looking Pompeii movie coming out next week? No, I don't. I don't want to see that. That looks like absolute diarrhea shit. You know, I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
You know? So, so we usually go see one a week if there's something worth seeing, but Hollywood is just making the worst movies right now.
Oh,
but
God, yeah.
I'll get to my real one right now. Okay. This is probably 94, 95. I can't remember what the movie was. Honestly, it was like a shitty 90s comedy is all I can remember. I can't remember which one it was. It was at the Copley Square Theater, which is now defunct. I'm the only one in the movie theater. And then some dude comes into the theater. And I have my book bag in the seat next to me. And he comes and sits in the seat that's right next to my book bag. There's nobody else in the theater. But he has to come sit almost right next to me. So then he starts trying to make some small talk to me, and I'm just kind of like those answers where it's like, I'm answering you, but I want you to leave me the F alone type of answers. So I'm doing that, and all of a sudden the movie starts. And then I see his hand start coming and slowly starting to move over to me. And it's getting closer. And closer and closer. So I just make a fist and I put it right on the armrest and I just see him move back.
My God.
And that kept him at bay to where he didn't try to go for the groin or anything like that, you know.
Yeah.
But the strange thing is that person turned out to be Barack Obama.
That's why you shouldn't go around calling yourself Cal Penn.
Yeah, exactly.
It's your own damn fault, really.
But no, it wasn't Barack Obama. It was just some regular gay dude looking for gay action at a movie theater.
Okay, so we've offended non-whites, homosexuals. Is there any groups we haven't offended tonight? Okay.
Democrats. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, but
we're about to offend somebody else in a minute, but yeah, go on.
Yeah, but that was That was, I think, probably my worst incident at a movie theater, was where I almost had to do some gay bashing.
What was the film you watched? Was it Philadelphia?
No, it was like some shitty 90s comedy, you know?
Oh.
And it's like, and the whole thing is, if I had to beat the crap out of the guy, I don't look at it, it would have been gay bashing. Because here's the thing. If the roles were reversed, okay, and it was me and it was a woman, if I go into a movie theater and start grabbing a woman's tits and she fucking bashes me, is that straight bashing? No, I tried to sexually assault her and she beat the crap out of me. So if some dude tries to do that to me and I beat the shit out of him, then that's not gay bashing. It's, you know, dude tried to sexually assault me and I beat him. But, you know, you live in Massachusetts and, you know, and everyone's so politically correct here, some people might go, oh, that's a hate crime. You know, that's how backwards the thinking is here.
What about John's potential hate crime after you watch Batman and Robin?
Well, everyone wanted to do a hate crime.
Dude, seriously, that was like, I was ready to see everybody. It was like families I went to a Friday night screening of that, opening night. There were families in Batman and Robin, and they just all looked like they were ready to grab pitchforks and torches.
I remember going to the critic screening of that movie and just fucking hating it. But there was another movie that was just like that, where people were excited to see this movie. Excited. People were not Batman and Robin, totally different movie. And I got to go to the critic screening of it. And, you know, it starts there. The movie starts. People are cheering. People have been waiting for this movie forever. About 20 minutes into it, I can't wait for this movie to end. And it just keeps going on and on and on, to the point where by the end of the movie, I'm just like, that is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Wait, I know what it is. That was Flipper, wasn't it, with Paul Hogan?
No. But that was a classic because it had Paul Hogan in it.
John, give me a break.
This was The Phantom Menace.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah.
Yep. I was just like, this movie's boring as all hell. Not even the racist Jar Jar Binks stereotype character could make the movie entertaining for me.
Well, wasn't the character who played Jar Jar a black man?
Yeah, the guy who played Jar Jar is a black dude.
Yeah. Wasn't it the same guy who played the Predator motion capture of that?
The guy who played the Predator, I think, was dead by then. Kevin Peter Hall, I think his name was.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, he also played Harry in Harry and the Hendersons.
Although that was Harry Knowles.
No.
Oh, okay. Wrong
they wouldn't have needed makeup by then.
Yeah.
Well, Harry and the Hendersons can walk, can't he?
Yeah, the Bigfoot was never in a wheelchair, you know. And no, Bigfoot just... and Bigfoot was actually in shape.
And Kevin Peter Hall probably tips waitresses. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He probably tips, you know, his servers. Hearsay.
So Harry Knowles doesn't tip anybody.
Yeah, that's what I've heard from different sources. He does not tip.
Okay, so if people out there, if you encounter Harry Knowles, if he doesn't tip you, you just tip him instead. Straight into the floor.
It's just like a tipping a cow. Just, you know. Except there's even less of a chance he can move.
And we've offended the people known as Harry Knowles.
That's the nerd, the kind of model collector still going to Ain't It Cold News. They've been offended. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good. The list continues.
So who have we done so far? We've done the gays, the blacks, the Harry Knowles. Harry Knowles is a subspecies on his own. he doesn't count as part of nerd culture or, you know, hipster culture. He's just fat ranger culture. That's all he is.
Well, also, since we're making fun of Harry Knowles, we also insulted the gingers.
Right. Yes.
The gingers!
And they deserve it.
Oh, man. All right. I think we lost track of what the hell. Anybody got any more stories at all?
I could tell some stories about when I was a projectionist at an Indian movie theater.
Oh, please, yes.
Yeah, we haven't got Hindus yet.
That's what I was waiting for, because I was going to say there's another race we've got to get to yet, because I was going to ask Arrow about his experience as a projectionist at a Bollywood theater, because you don't have a very high regard of the...
Indians?
Yeah. Okay. I want to keep it like that, yeah.
Okay, here's the thing. When I first started working at that place, I didn't dislike Indian people. They never really crossed my mind, you know? But I needed a job at that time. And they were also going to give me my own night to show my own stuff. So it was like, it worked out to be, a decent deal. But then when I started working, there was this Indian girl who worked there. And she said to me, do you hate Indian people? I said, no, I don't. I don't hate Indian people, And she goes, well, you're gonna. And boy, she's right.
Yeah.
And the guy who owned the place was very cheap. Very, very cheap. So basically the whole theater was kind of in disrepair. And, so I'm working. This was back when people used to show movies on 35 millimeters, a long time ago, 4 years ago, when people still used to use 35 millimeter. But this was back in 2000. Three, I think I started working there. And usually you have this like makeup table where you put the prints together. The makeup table didn't work. It needed like a new motor or something, and he didn't want to pay for it. So basically I had to put the reels on just using the this kind of like thing that you use to take the prints off the platter and put them back on. So I had to kind of piecemeal the prints together on that. And then also, we needed new bulbs in the projectors, but he didn't want to buy new bulbs or new reflectors. We had a crack reflector in there. He didn't want to, spend the money to get a new reflector. So the kind of whole place was in disrepair.
So he was tight fuck, basically.
Yeah. And the other thing is these prints. Indian prints are really shoddy prints. They were from this company called Ad Labs. And
sounds like the name of a protein powder place, actually. Or a supplement company, Ab Labs.
Well, not Ab, Ad, A-D. Ad.
Oh, Ad, oh, sorry.
Yeah, yeah. But the print, like, when you put the print on the platter, most prints, like, from the prints we got, 35mm prints from, like, American prints or Hong Kong prints, when you put it on the platter, the print stays together. But the Indian movies would always start to unravel. And one time, the print got caught on the platter, and the whole print got ripped off the platter onto the ground, and it took me about 10 hours to splice the whole movie back together.
Jesus. And those friggin' Bollywood films aren't short. They're like 2.5 hours usually.
2.5 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, so what I had to do was start taking the cores that, most of the prints are, and start taping them around the print so the print wouldn't fall off the platters anymore. But what I also learned one time was that they're also the prints are actually highly flammable too, because there's this thing it was a 2-screen theater, and there's this thing called interlocking where you run one print through 2 projectors, and he wanted us to do it for this movie, and I tested it out and I said something's wrong. I don't recommend showing this one print through the 2 projectors. And he's like, do it anyways. I go, something might go wrong. He's like, I don't care. I'm like, okay, I warned you. So we have packed theaters. And I had a guy who worked for me, this guy Ian, and I taught him how to use the projectors and how to put everything together. So I told him, go upstairs and start the movie, and I'll handle things down here, like with ticket sales and concessions and stuff like that. So all of a sudden, people start coming out of the theater, and they're like, oh, the movie stopped. And I'm like, don't worry, there's some guy upstairs. He'll make sure it gets started.
Hey Garrett, can I just cut you off there and ask you, what are concessions were they selling in an Indian theater?
Okay, it was mostly like, candy and popcorn, but they would also sell samosas.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah. So it was like, popcorn, soda, Reese's peanut butter cups, snow caps, and samosas. But that was like the only kind of Indian thing that we had there,
right,
for concessions. So about 20 minutes passes by, and I'm like, what the fuck's going on? Why isn't the movie started? So I go upstairs, and Ian is frazzled. He's like, oh my God. He's like, the print got stuck, and all of a sudden, flames were shooting out of the projector.
My goodness.
And so the print got stuck, and I guess the heat from the light lit on fire to the point where it started a whole fire. So he had to shut down all the electricity in the booth to stop the flames from coming out of the projector. And then he turned it back on, and he was trying to get it all up, but he was just, like, shocked by everything that happened up there. So I tell him to go downstairs and handle things downstairs, and I'll get the I'll lace up the film to go through, you know, into cinema number two. I said, start giving people refunds for cinema number one. I'm not going to start, you know, showing the movie on the projector that was shooting flames, you know, because if I start that on that and then all of a sudden the whole theater lights on fire and I kill a bunch of Indian fit people, I'm going to get, you know, I'm probably going to go to jail. So I can't. I'm not going to get a medal. I'm going to go to jail. So I'm not going to show. I'm shutting down that theater. So I get it going. I get it to where Cinema 2 is showing the movie, and I come downstairs, and there's this Indian woman yelling at Ian, just yelling at him about how we're going to refund her money and everything and all that. And she is just yelling at him. And all of a sudden, I felt this rage come into me, because I don't even yell, because I'm the manager at this place at this time, and I don't even yell at my employees. I don't yell at them. I look at them all as friends, and, you know, and all that. I'm not a dick, you know, managing the place. And I see her yelling at him, and I just go, shut up, you fucking cunt. And she looks at me like, you know what? And she's like, what'd you say? I said, shut up, you fucking cunt. And because so she goes, I'm calling the police. And I go, call the fucking police. I don't give a fuck. So basically she walks out.
Yeah.
And I at that point I'm just like, Ian, I gotta go upstairs. You know, because what happened is, because I already put in a call to the people who service the projectors to come to tell them we had a problem with flames shooting out of one of the projectors, and we need them to come by and take a look at it. And he calls back, and he tells me to go upstairs. And I go upstairs to kind of tell him what I see on the projector and all that, and he's going to come tomorrow morning. So I'm taking care of that upstairs. And then I go downstairs, and Ian's like, you'll never guess what just happened. I go, what? He goes, the police showed up.
Oh, Jesus.
And I go, well, what did you do? And he's like, they're like, what's going on here? And Ian said, nothing. And then they just left.
Oh, my God.
God. So that was the one time
so
I called.
What was the upshot of this whole thing in the end? Like, what was the sort of final thing? Did they sack you after that? What happened?
No. I got yelled at, because I guess she called the owner and complained about it. And he was like, if you call anybody a cunt in the movie theater again, I'm going to have to fire you. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But I knew he would not fire me, because I was running that whole place. I was the whole reason that place was staying together. He was ever there. But let me tell you another story. In the movie theater, in the lobby, I would keep the lobby, like, really cold, because it was during the summer, and I kept the lobby at, like, 65, you know, because I like it nice and cold, and that's where I'm spending most of my time, in the lobby, you know, selling tickets and concessions, and Indian people would always be like, it's so cold, I hope it's not so cold in the theater, and I'm like, no, and I keep it, like, 75 in the theater, and then basically what happens is, you know, about 20 minutes of the movie, an Indian person would come out and be like, it's too cold in the movie theater. Could you turn down the AC? And I go, okay. So I would take it from 75 and I put it up to 80.
Yeah.
15 minutes later, another Indian person comes out. It's too cold. Could you turn down the AC in the movie theater? And I go, okay. But at this point, I'm pissed. I'm like, you know what? All you motherfuckers always complaining about how cold it is in the movie theater. It's fucking summer. You know what? You guys don't deserve AC.
Did you turn
it
off?
I shut off the AC in the movie theater. I shut it off. And this is like 100 degree humidity. It is horrible outside. And these are 3-hour movies, so there's like about another 2 hours left in the movie.
Oh, man.
2 hours go by. No one comes out. Movie ends. They all leave. I walk into that theater. It's like a fucking sauna, and it smells like shit in there.
Yeah.
Because you had like a full theater of just Indians sweating on each other for like 2 hours, and it smells horrific. And I said, I do not understand Indian people. How they could be comfortable in here, I have no idea. Because I walked in for like 2 seconds and was like, I am the most uncomfortable I've ever been, and had to run over to the thermometer and turn the AC back up in the theater just so I could go in there and clean it. And they perplexed me, Indian people. I was just like, you guys are crazy, you know? And the movies all sucked. With every single Indian movie we brought in there, sucked. And what happened was, the movie theater got bought by Staples. So we were on borrowed time, and so I was like, I'm writing this job out so I can collect unemployment. You know? I'm like, I've never collected unemployment in my life. You know, I'm going to take a break and collect unemployment for a while and you know, just take a break. So what happens is, you know, we're not getting, you know, any real new movies or anything. We have to keep showing the same shitty movies over and over again. And, you know, and when you have a movie starting at, like, 9 o'clock, that means I don't get out of there until, like, midnight, 12:30. So I just started cutting shit out of the movie. I was literally just going through there and cutting, like, a half hour out of the movie so I could go home early.
You just cut all the dance sequences out. They trimmed it down to about 90 minutes.
I couldn't understand what was going on in the movie. So I don't know what the hell I was cutting out. So I would just be like, cut out. And then, because basically the owner told me, you know, because I'm big onto like film preservation and stuff like that. But I go, what happens to these prints when we send them back? They go, they destroy them. So I'm like, okay, so these prints are getting destroyed anyways. So fuck it. I'll just get a head start on the destruction of them. So I would just start cutting stuff out and throwing it in the garbage. And so I could go home a half hour earlier, you know?
Yeah.
And like, barely anybody said anything. It was like, it's like these movies are so stupid and dumb that, you know, I can cut a half hour out of it and people don't even notice.
You need to make it like that Woody Allen film, Deconstructing Harry, where it's all got that choppy editing.
Uh-huh.
You just make it like some sort of kinetic Indian movie. just cut a whole bunch of frames and just, like, massive sequences out of there, run it for about an hour.
Well, the other thing I like to do in the theater is when you know, because you have to play like Indian music when people are coming in. But what I would do is when the movie started, I would start throwing in like Ramones, John Spencer Blues Explosion, Queens of the Stone Age. And Indian people would come up being like, "What is this music? It is terrible."
Just say it's this new punk rock band from Mumbai called the Sings the Pathaks or something like that.
But it was just like they were just so annoying. Indian people were so annoying because they would also be, like, you know, we had a set price for how much a movie ticket cost, and they would come in and be like, "Can I get the movie ticket for cheaper?" "No, you can't."
Oh, they love their bargaining. Yeah,
it's $7. Give me $7, or you're not seeing the movie. You know, and it was just. And the guy who ran the place was cheap. He was playing Ian. Ian's a white guy, and I said, "Ian, how much are you making an hour?" And he told me. And then I went on the internet and looked it up. He was getting paid 50 cents under minimum wage.
Shit.
Wow.
He's being exploited then.
Yeah. I'm like, Ian, he's paying you less than minimum wage. It's ridiculous. And what I was getting paid wasn't even that much. The only reason I stayed there, because I knew the place was closing down, and they gave me my own night to show my own movie, and I made money that way. So it was. But like, Ian, I'm going, Ian, he's. You're not even making minimum wage here. I mean, I think that's illegal, you know? And but. Yeah. It was a nightmare working there, but I don't ever recommend working in an Indian movie theater for anybody.
John, do you think we still got an Indian audience left after that?
No, if we ever had one, they're gone.
They're gone now. Yeah.
Apologies to people in Mumbai.
Yeah, and Karachi and everywhere else.
We may have lost a lot of female listeners too with the liberal use of the word because.
In my defense, that woman was acting like a cunt.
Well, yeah, she kind of was, but
that's all right. We chalked up the C word about 9 times.
It's more or less a taboo word in America. It's not really a taboo word in England or Australia, where I guess we have a lot of listeners. So, you know,
yeah, it's oh God, over here we say it like a term of affection for the country.
It's like it's like brother. You know,
it's like, well, they say, "Where are you from?" "Straya." That's always, but it's Straya.
Irvine Welsh's Midnight Movie Cowboys.
Yeah. Or a David Mamet. Yeah. Oh, yeah, John, you got any more? You got any ones that can top that?
No, I don't have anything to top it. I never worked in a movie theater. It's funny. I never worked in a video store, never worked in a movie theater or a record store.
No,
only worked in a Laserdisc store, the one format that died within like my time of working there.
Yeah, but you did get to listen to a lot of Kiss Alive while working.
That is true. That is true. The boss played a lot of Kiss Alive and Kiss Alive 2.
Really?
Yep.
Now I know why it shut down, I suppose.
If I played my music, he would just come over and he goes, John, what's this? Ah, it's the Groovy Ghoulies. Sound like the Ramones. And the next day, I'd be like, he'd come over again, John, who's this? Oh, you know, it's Naked Ray Gun. Sound like the Ramones. And then it'd be the third day, and it'd be like playing the Cramps. John, who's this? The Cramps. They sound like the Ramones. Everything you listen to sounds like the Ramones, John.
Then you should have played the Ramones. John, you should have played the Ramones. You would have come over and said, John, who's this? The Ramones. Sounds like the Cramps.
Yeah. He probably would just say the Ramones sound like the Ramones, but
it's probably even heard the Ramones.
He might play the Motorhead, and that's about it.
No, he couldn't say possibly the Motorhead sound like the Ramones.
No. Motorhead is Motorhead.
That's right. All right. Oh, I don't know if I've got any more stories left after that. I think I'm a bit dazed and confused after that
Indian theater, the Tales of the Indian Theater.
No.
Garrow's Bollywood Adventures.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
there's a title of the episode. Tell me about it, Garrow's Bollywood Adventures.
Well, the one thing I did like working there was I had 35mm projectors at my beck and call. Like, I could go in there anytime with one of my prints, put it up on the platter, and actually watch a Hong Kong movie anytime I wanted on 35mm, which was great. I do miss that.
Mm-hmm. But Garrow, would you risk one of your precious prints being destroyed by that projector?
Nah, I knew how to handle the projector.
Oh, okay then.
The most dangerous thing to film prints in that theater was me, and it was mostly just film prints.
Oh Lord! Well, I've only got a few honorable mentions about that time that I tried to knock off that Sri Lankan girl when we went to the drive-in to watch Color of Night. I never quite got there. This Sri Lankan girl I was chasing. I mean, like Garrow's talking about Indian girls. Like, this Sri Lankan girl was fucking beautiful, like, absolutely hot. But she just never wanted to get past that friend stage. And, like, come on, you know? Like, we're watching Color of Night. Like, I deliberately chose that film because she goes, Stuart, we're going to go to the drive. Do you want to go to the drive? And I said, sure. She goes, pick a film. And I heard Color of Night was shocking. Terrible movie. But I heard there's a lot of sex in it, you know? I said, let's go see Color of Night. Something, if the film's that bad, maybe it might, you know, lead to something. And I'm watching this film, I'm thinking, this film's shit, there's all this action happening here, you're in a car with me, there's nothing happening in this car, come on you frigid little Sri Lankan girl, let's get something happening, you know, we've got hormones going at fucking 100 miles an hour, we're both in our early 20s, and there's nothing happened that night. So, for me, that was one of my worst experiences, because I never got anywhere with that girl. I ditched her after that. I just didn't want to be friends with her no more.
Yeah, Blue Balls in a bad Bruce Willis movie.
Oh, God. Yeah. And like,
into the train right there.
Oh, God, yeah. And it was a shocking film. What else? The time we went and saw Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles, we just couldn't believe how bad it was.
You didn't enjoy that? Oh, my God.
That sounds like... Yeah, that's a classic.
That's your national hero. How can you put down your national hero?
We eat our national animal, like kangaroo. So what the hell do we care about some aging idiot on the screen?
We're gonna have to do a Paul Hogan episode.
Yeah, I think I'll be sick that week.
All right.
Hey, what do you think of the movie? What do you think of the movie Kangaroo Jack?
I never bothered with it. I'm not going to be offended that much. I'm sorry. I don't want to commit a hate crime against Jerry O'Connell.
But it does have. But I do heard that the kangaroo raps in the movie.
What, like the leprechaun does in that Leprechaun in the Hood?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I heard he doesn't even rap in like an Australian accent. I heard it's more of like a, you know,
Canadian
black. No, more black. You
know. You're talking crap, right? You're talking for real.
No. I heard that it's actually a scene in Kangaroo Jack where the kangaroo raps.
Why the fuck would a kangaroo rap? I'm just...
Listen, this is Hollywood. They come up with the most boneheaded ideas. I mean, this is Hollywood's support for people who thought, you know, putting nipples in the bat suit was a great idea.
Yeah, they thought Just Imagine was a great idea.
Exactly.
Oh, I just looked it up as well. It is on YouTube, the whole film.
Just Imagine?
Yeah.
I'm sure its views will go up now. Anybody still listening to this?
Just Imagine.
It's pretty much the first gay porno film.
You know a film we need to cover one day? I know Hunter's got a copy of it. I sent it to him. Have you guys ever heard of one called Wham Bam Thank You Spaceman?
Yes, I have.
I saw it years ago.
It's horrible.
Yeah, it's dreadful.
It's dreadful.
Actually, when we were shooting Actress Apocalypse, Rich would throw on that movie and make us watch it every now and then. Wham Bam Thank You Spaceman. In fact, there's a line that's in Actress Apocalypse where Vance is saying, that's finger-licking good, which is actually a line right from
that film, Wham, yeah. Bam.
Yeah, yeah.
We should review that one time, because I don't think nobody else would. That was Ted V. Michaels, right? Was that one of his? No. Sorry, it was somebody else.
It was a Harry Novak production.
That's it, yes. Yeah.
Used to be distributed by Something Weird, but I think Something Weird lost their deal with Harry Novak recently.
Yeah, I've still got that Something Weird DVD. It goes for a fortune now, I think it was, but...
Yeah, as soon as that deal was off, the collector's prices on some of that stuff shot up.
Oh, final thoughts.
I think the final thoughts is none of us should be allowed to be in movie theaters because we're awful.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, we should bring up, before I forget, and I did promise Hunter that we'd bring up his one experience. He says he hasn't got many experiences. Okay, so Hunter's one is, he tells us that... during Drag Me to Hell, he some black dude yelled out, "Bitch, you got a poltergeist."
Hold on, you got to do. You didn't sell it good enough.
All right,
you got to be like, you know.
All right, let me do the black voice. You want me to do the black voice, okay. Then?
Yeah, you got to do it. You got to really sell
it. All right, let me try that. I'll read it out again. So Hunter tells us with his one experience that he can come up with. He was watching the film Drag Me to Hell, and a black dude was there, and he yelled out, "Bitch, you got a poltergeist."
That I actually felt like that there was a black guy in the room right here.
Yeah,
really?
That's totally how, fooled.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
theater of the mind right there.
I know.
Mama always said life was like a box of...
you're going to have to cut that, Stu.
Fuck yes. Jesus. Damn, chicken jokes always get cut. What the fuck? Seriously.
You see, what you got to do is you got to get a black friend and have him go out and eat fried chicken and then talk about it, then you're good.
Oh, man. That's where I'm missing out.
Yep.
All right. Let's wrap it up. I think we've gone over the hour. We said we were going to do a hitting on...
Yeah, that was supposed to be an hour show, so we just, like, whip through stuff.
By the time I cut this out, cut it down probably about, like, 45 minutes, I think. Yeah.
It's just we've offended everybody, so... So was that Hunter's best experience or worst?
Only experience.
Only experience, wow.
Yeah.
He's only seen Drag Me to Hell in a theater. That's the only movie he's ever seen in a theater.
See, Hunter's younger than us. That's why. So,
yeah. Because I have tons of incidents of people yelling at the screen. So.
Oh, I'm
so
sure. I mean, see, that's the
and
thing.
Not always black folks. That's like the stereotype. White people do it too. So.
But we don't have that. See, over here, that's a film. That's a film. That's the thing that's different between this country and America. It's the film etiquette. Over here, nobody talks during a film.
It's that way in Canada and I think Japan as well.
But over here, the film starts, you shut up. You don't say a word. Anybody talks, anybody points at the screen and talks, believe me, you get jumped upon and told to shut the fuck up. Mm-hmm. Straight away. Over here, I noticed when I went to see Thor a few years back, there was people talking and hollering all the time like, yeah, this is going on. Over here, over in Australia, you wouldn't last. You'd be beaten up. You're told to shut your face. Yeah. So it's a really different sort of atmosphere. Did I like it? I'm not used to it, you know? I don't know.
Well, people are very rude in a lot of going to see movies in America.
Yeah,
not very reserved. Very loud, boisterous, you know.
But to the point where somebody, if they're just chewing on some popcorn, someone will turn to you and say, shut up. Seriously, it's like, we're paid the money. I think because of the fact that we pay such high prices over here, we want to hear every single...
You guys pay more money for it.
Oh, God, we pay more than any country in the world. It's been determined. We are the most expensive country in the world to go see a movie in the theatre. It's just ridiculous. Jeez. Well, it's $20, John. And it doesn't get any cheaper.
That's ridiculous.
It is crazy. And I have, I asked somebody one time, I said, who was a projection, I said, how do they get away now with digital projection, yet still paying for the price of what it would be to ship 35mm prints over here? Because they're trying to pay back for the money they pay for the digital projection projectors.
Yeah.
Is this going to be years before the prices even come down? I said, theaters won't last years over here. They'll be gone.
Yeah.
I mean, video stores are just about dead. One of the video stores around the corner from me, one of the only surviving ones, just selling off a ton of stuff that, you know, they're scaling down to almost half the size of what they were because no one's in there. Like, yeah. You go in there on, say, a Saturday night, it'd be chock-a-block. It'd be everybody in there. I went past there on a Saturday night when Karen and I went out to dinner, and I only stopped off at the supermarket to grab something, and there was like two people in there. You used to get about maybe at least 18 to 20 people at one time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a real dying business over here, video stores, and I think theater will be as well. I think people's going to get fed up. There's going to be an on-demand service that'll eventually creep its way into Australia, and people are like, okay, you can pay $20 at the theater, or you can pay $8 at home, and you get it for one screening only. It'll kill theaters, and I hope it does.
Yeah.
You know, I hope it does. I feel bad for the filmmakers themselves and the companies out there losing money, but theaters over here got no one to blame but themselves. I mean, fuck them, I say.
Yeah, that's kind of how I view it.
Yeah.
But now we have the competition of stuff like, we have Alamo Drafthouse, and they're doing retro showings, and they strictly enforce no talking in the theater. And so now other theaters are trying to compete, and they're doing archive kind of retro screenings of older movies. Like, one theater showed Dirty Harry, one showed Caddyshack. And
It's like the Astor over here. The Astor Theater over here is a fantastic place. Because, all the shows, 98% of the films they show are all retro films, you know, and 35mm prints or 2K digital projections. Sometimes even 4K digital projections they show. And, I mean, God, what is it, May 2nd? They've got Can't Stop the Music on the big screen there with the audience participation as well, or a live commentary, over the top of it.
So you're going to that?
Of course I'm going to that.
All right.
Shit.
Just want to let's mention that to our offended listeners. So,
yes,
that's right.
Stuart is going to see a piece of gay cinema, so don't be too offended.
I am going, and I cannot wait. It actually falls on my holidays from work, so there was no way in hell I'm going to be missing that screening. I mean, shit, I get to see that thing on the big screen with a, there's a troupe over here that do like voiceovers for really, really bad films, and they just do comedy over, talk over film with comedy. And I've seen the film tons of times, so I know just about every damn word of that film, so I'm not too worried about it. I just want to see the new take on it with its new commentary by this mob, who I've never seen them before. I've only ever heard about them. But, that's what I'm saying. With the Astor, they show stuff like that, and, Can't Stop the Music, I can't wait to go see it there. On that note, Garo, plug some shit.
Okay, my movie Dangerous People, you can see the trailer on Vimeo. My editor has it right now. He's doing a polish on my edit, so hopefully soon it will be done.
Is he out of hospital yet?
Yeah, he's out of the hospital.
Oh,
he's
good. I'm glad to hear.
So he's got everything, so hopefully I'm hoping to get a message from him that he's done with his polish of it, and then I'm going to head down to Florida for about a month to finalize everything, and then we'll have a completed movie.
Where was it shot? Was that shot in Boston or Florida?
That was shot in Florida.
Okay.
Due to the violation of every form of moral code by Garo, the next 10 minutes have been omitted. And now, back to the Midnight Movie Cowboys.
So, those are two projects I'm working on right now.
God. You must understand now, I'm actually in the fetal position in the corner of the room. Seriously.
You know it's not... I can't make an appearance without shocking you. You know that it has to happen.
All of God's children in my ass.
And you should leave that all in the podcast.
We actually enjoy doing the show, Gary. We'd like to see it carry on next week.
Oh, oh, what do you think? Obama's going to be like, oh, you guys, yo, I heard that episode at the end where Guy was in all the crazy Crave on out there. You're not allowed to do a podcast anymore. You're done. I see, here's the thing. Maybe I'm crazy, but I don't see anything wrong with what I just said.
All right. That's all you got the plug, Garrow, is it?
Yeah, Dangerous People on Vimeo, Nudity in the Trail, movies coming soon.
I like the fact you always have to highlight the fact there's nudity in the trailer.
Because that gets dudes to go look at the trailer. And then at Fake Paramount on Twitter, and then you can friend me on Facebook.
I'm actually curious after this episode drops to see if Garrow's numbers drop dramatically or increase dramatically, and all he's getting about another 5,000 friends from India. All right. Okay.
I didn't even get to the other piece I prepared.
Oh, God.
Should I save that for the next podcast?
Save it for the next one, please. Yeah. Okay. We've had enough shock value as we can take for this episode.
You know, I actually sit down and I prepare these bits.
I know you do. You get told and you get given. I think in future we'll just give you like one day's notice.
No, that's even too much. You should literally give me like 5 minutes notice.
All right. Okay, so we'll be back next week. All right, until next time, see you later.
Mahalo.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.